Welcome to the Self-Worth Safari podcast, a series in which we explore self-worth in its various applications to life and to work. Today, I'm delighted to be joined by Dr. Andrea Pennington. I first came across Andrea when we were researching, in fact, for Self-Worth Week, and we were looking for some really inspirational speakers for that international event, the first of its kind. And one of our team found Andrea. And Andrea has a wonderful video on TED called My Journey to Self-Love, which chimes so well with all that we talk about on this series of self-worth. Andrea, you're very welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, John. It's a pleasure to connect.
Now, I know that many people who might be listening to this might not have seen the TED Talk. Can you give us a little summary of your journey as it relates to self-worth and self-love? And we can kick off from there.
Sure. Well, I am American, but I'm living in the south of France, just by way of context. And growing up in America, I had sort of the typical programming that, you know, you work hard in school, you get an education, get a good job. That's how you have a secure future. And because my parents were divorced, and that was really the rhetoric coming from my father, I felt very compelled to follow his advice. And he also was giving me this message that all the other things that I loved, like music and theater and dance and all the performing arts, he was telling me that that was not good because it was a distraction, because it wasn't something I could rely on. And so unfortunately, like so many people, I ended up sort of hiding my artistic passions mm-hmm. and going more into scholastics. Now, fortunately, my mother, who is also a physician, I really enjoyed following her through the hospital and seeing the impact she had on people's lives. And I was really fascinated by the mind-body connection and studying science. So I did go to medical school and became a physician. But in medical school, I became profoundly depressed. And when I went to the student health services, they said, oh, you know, this happens, medical students get depressed, it's overwhelming, there's all this volume and it's competitive. And I was just put on an antidepressant and had some sessions with a counselor. But it was really kind of strange that somebody noticed that I was a performer. Actually, it was one of the doctors who remembered me from my interview. And she was like, you're the one that plays classical piano, right? And I'm like, yeah.
Amazing.
She said, well, you should just play piano 30 minutes a day. And at the time I was like, are you crazy? I don't have time for 30 minutes of piano. But This was the first time that I ever heard anyone refer to the arts as therapeutic. And I did get through medical school and I got into my residency at Georgetown Hospital. And once again, I fell into a depression. But then I was really dealing with a lot more of the hospital bureaucracy and the added pressure on me. But I did not feel the freedom to do anything artistic until I decided to take a year off. And in taking a year off, I started to explore entrepreneurship and just sort of reconnecting to my passion, which is performing arts. And it was sort of in this mix between entrepreneurism, hospital work, performing arts, that I was getting all this judgment. Yes, once again, from my father kind of saying, wait a minute, we got you all the way through med school and now you're doing what? And so I had this constant feeling that no matter what I did, it wasn't enough. It wasn't good enough. It wasn't in the box enough. And I started to suffer with even more depression and anxiety.
Right.
And as you've seen in that TED Talk, ultimately it led to a major, major dark night of the soul, spiritual crisis that fortunately I was delivered from. But that is really why I've been so passionate about helping people discover their authentic self and yeah. and embrace this idea of self-love.
Now, we will come to self-love in a moment, but you mentioned a number of times there the word depression.
Yeah.
Now, we know this is on the rise right across the planet. Of course, the year that we've just had has, if anything, added even more to that unfortunate wave. Talk to me a little bit about that. You are a doctor. You're in practice. One of the many things that you do is a medical practice. Can you speak to us a little bit about depression and how that links with self-love?
Absolutely. I kind of grew up I've been a physician for 20 years. So in my training, we often heard that depression was, you know, based on brain chemistry, or maybe some of your hormones were out of whack. Of course, situational depression, if you suffered a loss or, you know, something like that, of course. But fundamentally, the belief was there's something wrong with your brain chemistry or your brain wiring. Maybe you inherited it. And only about 30% of people get better with antidepressants, about the same with psychotherapy. Some of you are just going to have to deal with it for life. It was never introduced to me that a loss of connection with your authentic self could lead to this type of pervasive soul ache. This, you know, my depression looked like textbook depression. Mm-hmm. I had low moods. I had low energy. I had definitely negative, pessimistic thoughts. I didn't want to engage in things that were usually pleasurable. So all of those things, and it lasted for months. So, but it was not responsive to antidepressants, unfortunately. Right. But it was interesting because after I had my daughter, I had another bout of pretty severe depression. And our pediatrician picked up on it right away. And she sort of looked at me and she was like, "You're not okay." And she sent me to a specialist. And it's kind of weird, John. This was a moment when I said, okay, you know what? I've dealt with this in my own way. I've hid it. I've tried everything. I'm just going to come out and be honest. I'm going to tell this guy exactly how messed up my head is. And it was interesting. He was a specialist at Johns Hopkins Hospital working with like severely mentally ill people. And I thought, okay, I'm going to just lay it on him. And the thing is, he said to me, "You don't need medication. You don't need hospitalization. You're not depressed." And I'm like, "What do you mean I'm not depressed? I just told you about my moods and this and this and this and this." And he's like, "No, you're just out of balance. You're not," he didn't use these words, but it was like, "You're not living in alignment with your own truth." And it was true. I was trying to fit into these boxes. And I've only now come out in the last couple of years with a book about self-love, because what I noticed in myself, I also noticed in my clients in my medical practice. So people who had dealt with addiction and eating disorders, people who were healing from childhood trauma, they were also dealing with depressed feelings, and they found different ways to medicate it. Mm. But at the fundamental root of all of it was a lack of self-love.
Right. And why is this so difficult, Andrea? I mean, you'd imagine that loving ourselves should be the easiest thing in the world, shouldn't it? What in practice makes that so hard?
Well, unfortunately, it comes from the programming, the social and parental and family programming that we get. Because you're absolutely right. If we were just looking as a baby is born, unless there was trauma in the pregnancy, most babies are born expecting and accepting love. They don't have this idea or this narrative running that says, "I have to perform nicely to get love," or "I can't cry so I can get love." It's only until we have a caregiver, or a parent, or a sibling that shames us or tells us that something about us is fundamentally wrong or bad or naughty that we start to take on this belief that I'm not okay just as I am. Right. I'm not worthy of love and attention and comfort just as I am. So we all get it from different places, but that's generally where it starts.
Yeah. Yeah. And when you're working with people, either in your practice or through your writing, when you're taking somebody on that journey, What are the what are some of the experiences you you bring them through?
Well, the first thing we do is really start to identify where the, I call it faulty thinking, came on. Because if we were all born in a perfect world, like you said, we would all be just expecting love and knowing that we're lovable. Mm-hmm. And so what we literally do is go back and trace, when was the first time that you felt that you weren't good enough, that you weren't lovable, that you were somehow bad or naughty or flawed? And we literally draw a timeline of life events to see what events have played into either starting, initiating, or strengthening those beliefs. And we start to debunk them, demystify them, so that we can get back to that, that truth. So that's part of the process. In my self-love training, we take people through a series of exercises so that they can reconnect with the authentic self and start to recognize, who am I really versus who have I been programmed to be? But that's where we start.
Right. Now, let's talk about the creative side and performing, because one of the abiding memories from watching your TED Talk, for me anyway, was how the arts and how specifically music and singing, in your case, contributed so much to your discovery of your authentic self, as I think you would describe it. Say a little bit more about that, because this, you know, right around the world right now, we see the arts being pushed to the edge of curricula everywhere. Yeah. And yet we know from confidence building, and we know from the other work we do at Self-Worth Academy, we know how important the expressive arts are. What's your experience?
Well, in my case, I, again, with that parental influence from my dad's side, I didn't tell you about my mom's side. My mother, being from British Guyana, had this very post-Victorian air in our home, and we always heard that children were to be seen and not heard. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until I discovered the theater that I could start to really express myself. And, you know, now psychologists will say that whatever gets you into that state where you lose all sense of self, you feel like you're one with the task, you have these peak experiences that I believe really reconnect you with your heart, with your soul, with who you really are. And for me, that comes through music. For other people, that could be surfing, it could be gardening, it could be cooking, being out in nature. But one of the beautiful things about the arts is it does get us out of that egoic mind state where we're constantly judging ourselves. Mm-hmm. And for me, when I'm in that flow state, that is the time when I feel love. Not just that I am lovable, but I feel this force of love. And I find that when I recommend to my clients that they do something artistic, even if they're not going to show it to anyone, whether that's writing or painting, dancing or singing or molding something, there's something about the creative expression that puts us back into connection with our heart and with who we really are. And we get these little glimpses of lovability, like, yes, I am worthy of love.
Yeah, yeah. And it often strikes me as extraordinary, almost a paradox, that it's precisely in those flow states when we lose all sense of self that almost paradoxically we start finding it. It's there is definitely something poetic in that paradox, for sure. Let's have a look at today's world and how this sits. We've been through a year of travel restrictions and lockdowns and terrible isolation and people mourning loved ones that they've not been able to be with in their final moments, and you know, a terrible dose of insecurity and anxiety about the future. I'm sure you're seeing this surfacing in your practice and in your coaching work as well. What's your message in this pandemic world?
Well, I'm not only seeing it in my practice, I'm seeing it in my own life. I've lost friends this year. I've had a major shift in my business. Normally we host a lot of events live in person. My own mother suffered a stroke and was in the ICU, and I could not fly to her due to the COVID restrictions. So this is very personal for me. And what I'm seeing and feeling is an immense wave of grief we are all grieving loss, whether it's the loss of a loved one, or it's a loss of our personal freedoms with being in lockdown, a loss of our financial security with our jobs and the market. There's a huge amount of grief that's hit us. Now, I think early on in the pandemic, it was mainly anxiety, the uncertainty, the chaos, the panic. And then through the course of time, it has morphed into a pretty heavy level of grief. So that's where we are right now. And I think as we go into winter, many people are also going deep within to ask and answer this question. If I were to die today, would I be going out with any regrets? Because it could happen. I mean, obviously, it could always happen. Before there was a pandemic, there was still always a risk of you dying today. Of course,
we have a new awareness of that now.
Exactly. And yeah. So that's leading many people to ask, am I really living in alignment with my heart, my soul? Am I with the people that I truly care about? Am I doing the kind of work that is truly fulfilling and making a difference in the world? Mm. So it's been an incredible wake-up call for many of us to really, and myself included, to really investigate how am I spending each and every day?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And what difference will this make in your view? How will people be living differently when this is over, whenever that is, to before?
People will be living with a heightened sense of consciousness, a heightened sense of self-awareness, and whether they were on a spiritual path or not, people are now recognizing we are one family. We are an interconnected, interdependent organism. We're not single individuals. And I think that level of consciousness will impact the way we do business, the way we are in our relationships, including our relationship to the planet. So I do think it's going to be ultimately a change for the better. And I say that despite all the craziness and the chaos and the political system and social system and so many. I think we are moving toward a tipping point in consciousness where people are starting to wake up.
Yeah. Well, on that very optimistic note, I suggest we pause there. Let's just stay with the future for one last moment. Where would you expect to see the evidence of this waking up in looking at the economy, looking at society, looking at, you know, the immediate years ahead? Where would we see the early fruits of this new consciousness and this new awareness?
I think a lot of it for me, I'm probably because of my work, I'm seeing it in the business world. Because people are experiencing burnout and stress. And we know that just having a vacation isn't going to fix that. I think a lot of corporations are feeling the pressure to really change their culture and to, rather than focus on shareholder dividends, they've really got to work on employee well-being for retention, for quality of life. So I see corporations shifting. I see the way that we as individuals choose which companies we buy from. Mm-hmm. I think that's changing. I think this wave of green and sustainable and fair trade companies, people are going to continue to select to do business with them over others. So I think the way that the world works in terms of commerce will shift.
I think from our chipping in from our experience, we also see the amongst the young in particular, a demand. It's not just a requirement, a demand for meaningful work. People just don't want to be stuck in transaction mode anymore.
Yeah. I mean, God bless the millennials who, you know, really raise that flag. But you're absolutely right. I'm a parent to a teenager, and it's just a no-brainer. Like, why would anyone do a job that sucks them of their humanity and their soul?
Well, here's to the millennials.
Yes.
Andrea, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a pleasure to have you on the show. Andrea's book is, I can see it right behind her, but if you're listening on the show, you probably cannot. It's called Real Self-Love. It's her latest book. She has written many. And it's available wherever all good books are sold.
Thank you, John.
Thanks, Andrea.